the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Delighted to say that fresh from events at the Emirates last night, we're joined on the line by the Dundalk coach, Shane Keegan. Morning to you, Shane.
Well, good on, Adrian. You well?
Good. I know you wish you'd be joining us in slightly different circumstances this morning, but I wondered if, like, given the nature of the burst of goals last night, were you almost happy overall with the 3-0 against a top European side like that, or kicking yourselves almost that it might have been something else for you?
I suppose it depends on what point you ask me. At 40 minutes gone, would we have taken 3-0? Absolutely not. And at 47 minutes, would we have taken 3-0 100%, you know? It was just, you know, they really, really turned the screw on us during that short period. Ah, look, if you were to ask, if you were to say at the start of the night, given that we have such a big game against Pats coming this Sunday, and knowing that Arsenal do have the ability to maybe knock 6 or 7 past you when they're really, really on it, yeah, we probably would have taken it, because I think we can kind of head into Sunday with our reputation and our heads reasonably high, you know.
How frustrating was it with the two goals that came in such quick succession, having done so well up to that point? And I know the sloppy nature almost of them, Shane, was that, I presume, all the more frustrating?
Yeah, absolutely. And the players would know that themselves. So they were very frustrated and annoyed with themselves at half-time, as you say, the manner of the two. I think the second one had been a bit unlucky, because the shot has rebounded right into his pack. But yeah, no, it was, because to kind of undergo such an onslaught at times and do so well, for as you say, for the mistakes then to come in that manner is frustrating. I mean, I thought, to be honest with you, I thought one of the most impressive things that the lads did last night was their ability to defend inside the 18-yard box without actually clipping somebody or handling a ball or something like that was really, really impressive. So, yeah, on the flip side then, you do have to be a bit annoyed at the manner of the two goals.
And it's the set-piece thing again, almost, that comes back to haunt you a little bit. What's happening in the dressing room at halftime then, just given that it's such a hammer blow, and against a team like that, very difficult to get back into it? So what's happening in the dressing room at halftime in terms of the overall mood and trying to get people back on track?
Again, to be fair, I mean, you know, the way Filippo was looking at it is, you know, you do have to focus on how positive a 40-minute period it was, rather than zoning in too much on the final 5 minutes. And that was the approach that he took. And again, in fairness to him, you know, there's very little point in crying over spilled milk. So there was very little said about the goals. It was more so a case of looking at, is there anything we can do a bit better here to try and keep the ball and to try and relieve some of the pressure? Now, look, obviously, I mean, they're going to do that to absolutely anybody. You know, you're looking at all these different bits and pieces of information leading up to them, and without getting too geeky, there's a stat called PPDA, the amount of passes played per defensive action, and Arsenal was one of the lowest in the whole of Europe. The opposition averaged around 5 passes before they managed to turn the ball over, or they certainly did against Rapid Vienna. It was just under 5 actually, so it was the previous week. So they're going to do that to almost everybody, not just us. But at the same time, I suppose Filippo's focus was, you know, can we do this a little bit better to try and retain it, or can we do that a little bit better to try and retain it, rather than just talking for 45 minutes about how we were going to defend when we didn't have the ball, you know.
Yeah, on that point, I was like looking at it a bit last night. Arsenal did maybe what you might expect, to press up high, putting pressure on Dundalk, trying to play it out from the back almost. When that's happening to you, how difficult is it to stick to your first principles of wanting to play it out from the back, or trying to play a bit of football versus, oh, screw it, listen, we're getting squeezed here and maybe putting a bit of pressure on ourselves, let's just back it along?
Yeah, it's a fine balance, that's for sure, because I think we did make a decent effort to try and stick to our principles. I did, but at the same time, you know, sometimes fellas are going, oh, hold on, if I stick to my principles this time around, there's a chance that the ball could end up in the back of the net fairly quickly on me. And look, it was always a mix of just trying to get that balance somewhat right, in that, you know, we were never going to play it short every single time, but we had to make sure that we weren't going to kick it long every single time either. To at least try and keep them guessing. And, you know, when you look at some of the goals they had conceded, it came from trying to suck them up so that you could find a bit of space in behind. And sure, obviously, if we just keep kicking the ball along, then it's impossible to find space in behind. So, Look, again, I'd be perfectly honest about Filippo is probably a bit braver than I would have been in that respect. I don't know what I have been as, you know, as confident in Keith Hammer and that message home to the lads. And I think it was the right thing to do. I think it absolutely was the right thing to do. There were occasions where you had to go a bit more direct, which is natural enough. But I think, you know, there does seem to have been a couple of interviews where McKenna had to be praised our attempts to try and play football, which was great to hear.
Who was the Joe Willock? Because obviously getting a lot of praise this morning. Who was the player that impressed you most last night on the Arsenal side?
Gee, for me, I think, to be honest with you, I think it was probably Reece Nelson. For a fella who ordinarily probably wouldn't get in touching distance of an Arsenal match day 18, it's just ridiculous to see him in action. And actually, look, that applies to most of them, but he in particular, I'm probably speaking for the players really more than myself there, because you do throw it at players and you ask them who impressed them most, and there were, I said it was half of those, nothing kind of came back with his name when I was chatting to them in the airport and that kind of thing. Chris Shields says he'd given him his number one vote in the FIFA World Player of the Year voting this year. So that's how impressed he was by a fellow, as I say, who normally can't even make their match day 18, such as their strength and depth. But look, Willock, Pepe, you know, so many of them that they really, really were. Just it's you know, you see the stat of the fact that we didn't make a foul in the 90 minutes. There's pros and cons, and there's reasons why that stat came up, you know.
Was the stat about not racking up any fouls, was that a deliberate effort, Shane, last night?
Most definitely not, Owen. Most definitely right. Not. and I think we met one or two fouls to try and foul them at times. But no. It definitely was quite the opposite of anything, really. But look, you just have to hand it to them. At times you have to get close to them to be able to foul them. And you know, they have both, Owen. They have the physique, which makes it very hard to get close to them because they move so fast as an individual. Then obviously they're moving the ball so fast that you're running towards somebody and you might have intentions of you know, trying to lay a bit on him, but he moves that ball so fast again that by the time you're getting there, you're thinking, okay, like, I'm going to be so late here that if I do, like, this is going to be a red. So just need to put the brakes on rather than making a foul at all. So no, look, it definitely wasn't intention. It's just one of those kind of strange quirks on the night, I think, you know.
Chief Agnoli reminded me of a young fella at Fairground Park last night, Shane, who had sort of tested the waters a bit with a ride that he shouldn't be on and sort of slips past the barrier a little bit and is like, nobody said anything to me, so I'll just keep going. He was in the technical area. Was that just a chance my arm here and see if we can get away with it?
Yeah, look, I suppose it's one that wouldn't be drawn too much attention to right now, so it wouldn't, but look, it allowed him to be able to do the full of his role a bit better, which was great from that perspective, you know.
Yeah. Well, you still got plenty of TV time, you'd be delighted to hear, with the, you know, the official protocols around UEFA, and you being the coach and all that.
They know how to get the TV ratings up, Patrick.
I know he was trying to get Liam Brady at some point to have a chat just about Arsenal and about, obviously a guy who watched a lot of English football and been involved in Arsenal over the years. Did you get him in the end?
Yeah, he did. He had a good chat with him about I don't know if weaknesses is probably too strong of a word to use, but areas where there might be opportunities for us. So it was with that, obviously, Liam having had the career that he had in England, he'd be a name that he'd be massively aware of. So yeah, look, that was helpful. Any little kind of bits and pieces that you can get, I suppose we were fully aware, obviously, that they had Barry Solon involved, and they also had Owen Clarkin, who's obviously our former strength and conditioning coach, involved with their women's team and that. So they had a couple of inside sources themselves that were going to be able to give them bits and pieces, that was for sure. So we had to try and maximise every effort we could to try and get as much on them as possible as well too. You know, little bits that you wouldn't know just from watching them week in, week out, let's say.
Yeah, and how, from that point of view, how interesting was it for you over the last few days in the lead into that game, sort of like a bit of a different quality of player to have to review and advise about?
Yeah, it sure was. And strangely enough, Edwin, from a different perspective, it was kind of a little bit harder, because you know, I always knew, or well, didn't know, but I always had a fair idea that the likes of Reece Nelson and Joe Willock and Eddie Nketiah, maybe to a slightly lesser extent, but we knew these guys were going to be in the starting lineup. And then, you know, obviously they're not getting a huge amount of game time. So, you know, when you're preparing to take on Mold as we did the previous week, you know, there's endless footage of all these different players and the team style of play in general, whereas we actually did have to kind of scratch around a little bit more for the Arsenal stuff, because you know you need to go to the Carabao Cup games to find games where those guys have started, rather than looking at how they did against Leicester, you know, last Sunday evening. So there is a bit more work to do from that side of things, and you're maybe putting together a couple of individual clips on a few of those fellas. But look, in saying that, at the same time, Arteta is so principled and so definitely in his philosophy that, you know, if Elneny is playing in, you know, Granit Xhaka's position, well, then he'll do pretty much exactly what Granit Xhaka does. If Reece Nelson is playing in, you know, Aubameyang's position, you can be pretty sure he'll do pretty much exactly what Aubameyang does, certainly in terms of their movements and their patterns of play and that kind of stuff, because it's so nailed down with them. But it was a different challenge at the same time, but equally enjoyable, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, listen, well done, if that's the right phrase this morning. Tough place to go. Thanks, Mina, for taking the call, as always, after those games. Thanks, Shane.
No problem, lad.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Anybody who's been watching us over the last few weeks will have been aware at this point that you're coming to Mark Arkhard now for the football over the weekend with your non-fiction work here of must watch, might watch, and won't watch of games. And normally I'm sort of surprised at the games, and it's true also of this week, that you've put in the won't watch, but certainly one that's standing out that I'm surprised you've lashed into the must watch, top of the billing, Sheffield United against City. I thought you would have consigned that one to the don't bother list.
Well, it's the first game. It's the half 12 game tomorrow, and I know this is a tough weekend for the Premier League because they're competing with Championship, obviously the Six Nations as well, whereas they've almost had a monopoly of sporting events over the last few weekends, but the sporting calendar is cranked up. I know Owen touched on it during the week, and there's so much sport going on, so you have to be quite selective if you want to get through the weekend, if you want to actually function as a human being, whether you get to eat, sleep, shower, that kind of thing. There's also things that you have to do around the house. So the reason I've gone for Sheffield United and Manchester City, obviously Sheffield United haven't won a game this season. Manchester City dropped points again last weekend away from home, and they won during the week. Now we've seen this, they win Champions League games quite comfortably, and then it comes to the domestic league and they can't do it. So we know with Sheffield United, we saw them at Anfield last week, they are a pretty hard nut to crack. Now they haven't won a game this season, but they don't lose games by many goals. I seem to remember Manchester United beat them 3-0 towards the end of last season, but other than that I can't remember a team putting more than two goals past them. So we know how organised they are. This is going to be a test for the patience of Manchester City. And
are you suggesting Sheffield United are going to get something out of this? Is that why you're saying tune in?
I don't know if they get something out of it. I think the best they could hope for is a draw, but it'll just be interesting to see how Manchester City go about trying to break them down. We know City are so good in attack, and obviously Kevin De Bruyne didn't start that game last week against West Ham, so you'd imagine he starts, and he is the key to unlocking that Sheffield United back five. And it really is a hard nut to crack, and I think that's what impressed so much, whereas last week from a Liverpool point of view, that they conceded the penalty and they still were able to turn it around, because Sheffield United are one of those teams that you do not want to concede the first goal. We also know with Manchester City away from home in the Premier League, if they're trailing at half time, they don't win games. That's going back to the start of last season. So no, it's a tricky one. It's a lunchtime kickoff. It's obviously coming off the back of a European game for City, so they can't be sleepy going into this one. That's why I'm going to watch it. Plus, as I said, it's the first game of the weekend.
Probably by default.
The first game of tomorrow. There's obviously one on tonight.
Just about to say, you've consigned tonight's game to the Might Watch list, but I'm not sure if we'll... Do we have time to really get into the intricacies of Wolves versus Crystal Palace?
No, it's
probably not.
It's basically, who wants to attack first? Two counter-attacking teams, they're going to be urging each other to attack so they can break each other down. So this could be you know, a fairly low scoring one. But as I said there, just in the roundup, the winner actually goes level of points at Everton and Liverpool. So, you know, there is a bit on the line. But I'm sure I will probably end up watching it.
It's competing with the late, late shows that are thereabouts, Phil. That's why you're
well, in fairness, the late, really... late, you know, I don't, the late, late is usually on in my house on a Friday. So that could be the second screen for me.
Oh, Phil, talk to us now. Liverpool, West Ham, this is one that's definitely in the must watch, right? And like, apparently to do with the possibility of Moisey doing the tango up and down the touchline, obviously is a big reason that people are going to tune in. But on a serious note, like, there is suddenly a possibility. When you would have thought about this fixture a few weeks ago, you're thinking Liverpool get the job done here. But West Ham, 8 points in the last four, that 1-1 with City, and they are not the team that almost got relegated last season.
No, and they're not the team that lost 2-0 to Newcastle in the opening weekend, and then everyone looked at their next few fixtures and thought David Moyes would be sacked soon enough. And then David Moyes obviously had to stay at home because he contracted COVID-19, and from home he watched his team beat Wolves 4-0, Leicester 3-0. Then they come from 3-0 then against Spurs. They get a 1-1 draw against City last weekend. So David Moyes is feeling pretty good about things, and one notable change with his team from the team that he took over last season is those flair players, the likes of Felipe Anderson, Lanzini. I know he got that goal against Spurs, but these lads are not getting into, well, obviously Anderson's gone out on loan, but they're not getting into his team. He's got a really well-structured, hard-to-break-down team playing the counter-attack. Mikel Antonio is the key to all this. So we know Fabinho's missing for Liverpool. That's going to be a massive loss because he had slotted quite nicely into that defence without Virgil van Dijk. So what does Klopp do? He's obviously got Joe Gomez plus one. Joe Matip is close to a return. Does he go for Jordan Henderson, who obviously played there in the World Club Cup? Does he go for Reece Williams, the teenager who came on against Mitchell? And the biggest compliment I would pay to Reece Williams the other night is you didn't actually notice he was there because he was quite comfortable. He's quite a tall defender, maybe he'd be quite useful for set pieces. But I think having Alisson back is massive for Liverpool. But Antonio has had a tight hamstring the last couple of games. He's gone off. So that'll be one to keep an eye on. If he is in the starting 11, if Reece Williams does start, Mikel Antonio will be putting himself straight onto him, saying, welcome to the Premier League, son. Let's see what you're made of.
Are you playing Jota with the three boys up front?
I think he might do, yeah. I think he might go 4-2-3-1 again just to give a bit of protection to the back four, regardless of who is there, whether it's Jordan Henderson in the back four or Reece Williams. If Jordan Henderson doesn't play in central defence, you'd imagine he'd play midfield. I know Klopp took him off at half-time. He's pretty much managing his minutes at the moment. There was no injury there. He's just working his way back to full fitness. Might see Thiago as well. But if Liverpool play with that front four, obviously they're going to cause West Ham problems. But this is a tricky one. This is a game that caused Liverpool problems last season. And Moyes had no luck as Everton manager at Anfield, but he might feel this is the time. This is the time to go to Anfield and get a win.
Manchester United against Arsenal is in your must-watch games as well. Like, obviously it's a must-watch because of the two teams involved. But it does seem, on the evidence of Manchester United's and Arsenal's most recent Premier League games, that there is a huge premium on keeping things tight at the back at the moment. Arsenal are struggling big time to score goals. Manchester United not struggling when the team seems to be, their opposition seems to be excellent. Obviously, we saw that midweek. Are you giving this favourably in Manchester United's favour, Phil? Like, are they heavy favourites in your head?
I think, obviously, it all points towards a United win. But one thing Arteta has done since he's come in at Arsenal, he's made them harder to beat. And he's probably compromised a lot of their attacking play in terms of playing off the cuff. It seems to be very structured at the moment. Now, he had to shore things up because Arsenal were too soft. They were letting in too many goals. So now he's made them hard to beat. And you would imagine he'll sit in. And that actually makes things tougher for United. Obviously, United, we've seen with the wins away to PSG and the win at home to Leipzig. If you come onto United and give them space to play in behind, they'll absolutely rip you apart. And obviously, Rashford was key to that. Watching the game the other night, obviously they got the first half goal with Greenwood, and then when Solskjaer was able to bring on Bruno Fernandes and Rashford, the amount of space that Rashford had, if you give him that space, you're just asking for trouble. So this won't have gone unnoticed from Arteta. You'd imagine he'll sit in quite deep and they'll try and play in the break. What he does with Aubameyang, I don't know. I kind of thought when they signed Willian, this would be in a move from the left-hand side to the centre for Aubameyang. We haven't seen that yet. Maybe Sunday is the time to do it, because you need to get United out of their defensive shape. You need to bring United onto you and then see, can you exploit the space in behind them? Because we know Lindelof and Harry Maguire are not the quickest defenders. Their best defender is Aaron Wan-Bissaka. But, you know, if you bring United out and they have to play a high line, there's only so much Wan-Bissaka can do. So it could be cagey. I think that's why it's a must-watch. Mm. And probably you're buying into the history of the fixture, you know, what it used to represent. But here you have two teams trying to get back to what they used to be, still a fair bit off. But United certainly look like they're ahead of Arsenal in that sense.
You've Leeds, Leicester in the must-watch, and Tottenham, Brighton as well. And suddenly, you mentioned earlier on about after last night's game when Jose has a head in him like a smack backside, and he's making four substitutes at half-time, said he wants to make 11 if he could have done, and Dele Alli is amongst them. Like, this is just a continuation of a downward spiral here that he's lashing out and there's no way back for Mourinho. Or, I mean, they may well and probably will go out and beat Brighton at the weekend, but it feels like the continuation of a major downward spiral for this guy at Spurs.
Yeah, well, I think what Mourinho was doing last night was basically saying to anyone that questions why isn't such and such in the team, he'll just say, the Antwerp game. You ask me why Dele Alli doesn't get a game, I took him off at half-time. It was a terrible performance. So, now, I think all this does is basically just means Mourinho is going to stick to his tried and trusted 11. Now, that might come back to haunt them later in the season if he doesn't rotate enough, but is he going to rotate? I kind of thought the way he was going to approach the Europa League would be rest all your first team players, and that's what he tried to do last night, but it didn't work out. So that would suggest now, to get through that group, he's going to have to play more first team players for the rest of the European campaign, which could come back to bite them later in the in the Premier League. But no, the Premier League team is, you know, everything's going well in the Premier League. He hasn't been digging out players the way he usually does. And that was the first defeat of the season since the opening weekend when they lost to Everton. So things have been going quite nicely for Mourinho. But I think the reason any game Brighton are involved in, they don't really go into games the way they used to. Whereas since Graham Potter's come in, they said, look, they're going to have a go. They're going to lose games. They're going to give up opportunities. But they're actually quite entertaining. It's kind of gone the other way. Obviously, Chris Hughton was all about getting them into the Premier League, keeping them there, which he did brilliantly. And Graham Potter is now trying to add a few layers to them. So they're quite easy on the eye, but probably don't score enough goals for all that lovely football they play.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see where this train ends. You've got Burnley, Chelsea in the might watch, Newcastle, Everton as well, and Villa, Southampton, and Fulham, West Brom in the won't watch, Phil. So Listen, don't enjoy those games over the weekend that you definitely will watch, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Thanks, William.
Thanks, lads. Enjoy the shave. Yeah.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.